ಸ್ತೋತ್ರಂ ಕರ್ಣೇ ವಿಷ್ಣುಯಾಮ ದೇವಾಃ ಸ್ಥಿರೈರಂಗೈ ತುಂಸ್ತುವಾಂಗಂಸ್ತಸ್ತುನೂಭಿಃ ವ್ಯಶೇಮ ದೇವಹಿತಂ ಯದಾಯುಃ ಸ್ವಸ್ತಿ ನ ಇಂದ್ರೋ ವೃದ್ಧಸ್ರವಾಃ ಸ್ವಸ್ತಿ ನ ಪೂಷಾ ವಿಶ್ವವೇದಾಃ ಸ್ವಸ್ತಿ ನಕ್ಷತ್ರಾಕ್ಷೋ ಅರಿಷ್ಟನೇಮಿಃ ಸ್ವಸ್ತಿ ನೋ ಬೃಹಸ್ಪತಿರ್ದಧಾತು ಓಂ ಶಾಂತಿ 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 ಹರಿ ಓಂ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುಭ್ಯೋ ನಮಃ ಹರಿ ಓಂ ಸೊ ಯೆಸ್ಟರ್ಡೇ ವಿ ಸ್ಟಾರ್ಟೆಡ್ ವಿತ್ ಕ್ವೆಶ್ಚನ್ ನಂಬರ್ 3 ಫ್ರಮ್ ದ ಥರ್ಡ್ ಸ್ಟೂಡೆಂಟ್ ಕೌಶಲ್ಯ ಆಸ್ಕ್ ಪಿಪ್ಲಾಲ ದ ಮುನಿ 5 ಕ್ವೆಶ್ಚನ್ಸ್ ಸೊ ವಾಟ್ ಆರ್ ದೇ ವಿಲ್ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ರಿವೈಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಕ್ವಿಕ್ಲಿ ಅಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ವಿ ವಿಲ್ ಮೂವ್ ಆನ್ ಸೊ ದ ಫಸ್ಟ್ ಕ್ವೆಶ್ಚನ್ ಕೌಶಲ್ಯ ಹ್ಯಾಡ್ ವಾಸ್ ವೇರ್ ಡಸ್ ದಿಸ್ ಪ್ರಾಣ ಕಮ್ ಫ್ರಾಮ್ ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಪ್ರಾಣ ವಾಸ್ ಐಡೆಂಟಿಫೈಡ್ ಆಸ್ ದ್ಯಾಟ್ ಸೋರ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಪವರ್ that entity which supports life at the individual level as well as existence of the universe at the totality level. So this prana is not just this breathing air that we breathe in and out. Prana is indicated as that force or that power or that principle which holds this whole universe together at the samasti level, at the totality level. And also holds me together as an individual and sustains my life. So therefore the natural question the student had was, where does this principle come from? What is the cause of this principle? Who is the father of this entity? Where did it come from? So that was the first question he asked. Then he says, this power, this force, this principle, if it were to sustain this body and make this jivatma a functional entity, make this individual person a functional entity in this world by supporting all the functions of this person, how did this power actually enter the body? From where did it enter the body? That's the second question. The third question was, having entered the body, you have said, O teacher, that prana divides itself into 5 to sustain various functions. So how does this prana divide into 5? How does it do it? That was the third question. And the fourth question was, at the time of death, when the body is no longer sustained, life is no longer there in the body, and therefore the body drops off, what happens to this prana, and from what, in what way he prana will leave the body? So very, very logical questions actually. And then finally, he said, please tell me more about this idea of prana as a sustainer at the vyashti level as well as at the samasti level. How does, by dividing itself into 5, prana sustains the individual life as well as sustains the existence of the entire universe? So those were the 5 questions. And we looked at these answers of the teacher in some depth. But I will very quickly summarize. So the first question was, where did this prana come from? The teacher had a very easy answer. The teacher says, prana actually comes from Atma. So what is the Atma? We also should know what is the Atma, because the teacher doesn't explain what is Atma. So we know what is Atma. Atma is the same as Brahman, that is the same as the entity which is thriving. Me makes me alive, makes every other entity alive, holds this whole universe together. So all the description seems very, very similar to the description of prana. So then what is the difference between prana and atma? So the biggest difference is that prana is the one that makes things happen. Prana is the one that is going through modification by dividing itself into five functions and supporting the five functions of the body. What are the five functions? Respiratory system, ejection system, then circulatory system, then digestive system, and reverse system. Whereas Brahman has no doership, doesn't do anything, but is a sentient live entity. It is not jada, and it does not undergo any modifications. We have been told again and again in every Upanishad that the Brahman does not undergo any modifications. There is no avyaya. It is something that doesn't divide itself. So therefore we have to understand that although the description of prana very much compares to atma, prana is not atma. And so therefore through this question the teacher makes it very clear that we understand that obviously while prana is a very important entity, a very important power, prana is distinct from atma. Just as Ishwar is an important power, as Ishwar is the Prajapati, Ishwar is the one who created this universe, Ishwar is distinct from Brahman. So Brahman and Atma are one and the same. And we are told in every Upanishad that the Brahman and Atma are the same, because Brahman is the word that we use at the universal level, totality level. Atman is the word that we use at the individual level. But there is no distinction between them in the sense that I have mistakenly identified the Brahman supporting me through the substratum as an individualized Atma. So there is no individual soul or there is no individual Atma. There is individual Jivatma, but no individual Atma. Atma is universal in the sense that Atma is everywhere, Brahman is everywhere. I am living in Brahman. Brahman is in me is a limited sense. It is a limited sentence. It is a limited understanding. The real understanding is I am in Brahman. So therefore Brahman, everything is nothing other than Brahman. And the closest we can explain the existence of Brahman through a physical example is space. Nothing in the world can exist without space. If the space was not there, I cannot sit here, you cannot sit there. None of this can exist. Everything will require space to exist. And yet, we cannot blame space for creating anything. It supports the existence by being there. Similarly, Brahman supports the existence, the entire creation, by being there. But you cannot superimpose any doership on Brahman. So therefore, the teacher made that clear somewhat by saying that prana and atma are distinct. So prana came from atma. Prana is not atma. Okay. Then, how does the prana enter the physical body? So the teacher said that manokrutena, manokrutena. So then we say the kruti happens by physical body. What do you mean manokrutena? So first of all, there has to be some kind of an idea, some sankalpa is there. That sankalpa comes because we want to achieve something. We want to progress, we want to attain something. Then that sankalpa, when it becomes drudha, when it becomes firm, then we have an intense desire to achieve that. Whether it is a worldly thing or whether it is mumukshutvam, whether it is moksha, whatever it is. And then when that desire gets hold of us firmly, then all our activities will be directed towards achieving that goal. So therefore that kruti starts with mana. All the physical activity that we will have to perform to get that goal, to achieve that goal, starts with the desire which has arisen in the mind as a result of some sankalpa, as a result of some determination, some value that we have given intellectually to something. So therefore manokruti. So with this manokruti, prana enters into the body. The idea is that whatever is the intense desire for me to achieve in this life, a suitable body and environment will be chosen for me to achieve that goal, and then prana will enter and illumine all my functions, support all my functions. And I will be born as a new entity. So manokrutena, prana enters. Then the next question was, how does the prana divide itself into five? So that we have seen in much detail. Again and again we have said what the five functions are, where they are residing, etc., etc. It will come again, so I am going to not spend much time on it today, right now. Then, through which path the prana leaves the body? This is where we are actually, right now. What is the path through which prana leaves the body? So that we'll take up that conversation. And then finally the question was, how does prana support the totality as well as the individuality? So that is the last question which will be answered. Okay. So let us chant the seventh mantra. Athekya yordvam udanaha punyena punyam lokam nayati papena papam ubhavyameva manushya lokam. So, atha eka urdva udanaha. Atha eka. Now, atha eka means now then. One out of this. So, one out of what? So, we had seen in the previous mantra that about 100 nadis come from heart and spreads themselves, and then each one of them gets divided into 100. And then each one of those 100 gets divided into 72, etc., etc., we had seen. So out of these 100 main nadis, one goes up. One actually takes the direction of upward direction. And that nadi is said, he said, that is called the udana. It's one of the five functions of the prana. One of the five systems that prana supports. So therefore this goes urdhvam. Now the name is not given here, but through different readings we know that this nadi is called the susumna nadi. And we say through Yoga Shastra that this Sushumna remains inactive unless we activate it by our desire and spiritual practices to carry our spiritual upliftment from a lower status to a higher status. So here in this description of prana, the nervous system is not really described. But in the Yoga Shastra, it is there. So the rishis knew about it. So the efferent nerve and the efferent nerves, the nerves that carry the message for processing to the brain, the nerves that actually carry conductor signals for the functioning of the limbs, etc. These are called Ida and Pingala, Sanskrit. And then there is a Sushumna. So Ida and Pingala are very well known. They are functional in all persons. But Sushumna is not necessarily activated unless the person has spiritual quest. So they say. Anyway, that is all not here. So this Atha Ekam Urdhva Udanaha. So this Udana Nadi is the one that he says goes up. And the idea is that it is that Udana through which prana will eventually leave the body. And once the prana leaves, there will be no sustenance of the body. All the functions will actually wither away and the body will die. But then lives and goes where? By the way, living is also important. Now this is interesting, that the nadi that is for most of the life in many people is not active, becomes extremely active and powerful at the time of death. So all the force of the pana, apana, samana, vyana, is all gathered by Udana. So therefore at the time of that, the circulatory system becomes weak. The digestive system becomes weak. The ejection becomes uncontrolled. All those powers are snatched by Udana. And finally the respiratory system also becomes weak. And when the last breath is breathed, and the next breath is not breathing, prana lives through Udana. Then the natural question would be, where would the prana go? Therefore here it says, punyena punyam lokam nayati. It leads the individuality, not the totality. It leads the individuality to punya loka, to heavenly abode, if the person has lots of meritorious deeds in his account, in his credit or her account. Papena papam, on the other hand, instead of meritorious deeds, if the person was engaged in activities that created a lot of papa, a lot of sins were accrued, then that person will be led to papaloka. Papaloka means hell. Ubhyabhyam eva manushyalokam. And if there is a balance, balance doesn't mean exactly equal, but there is a balance. The person is not that bad. He did some good work also and he helped the society also. He came to listen to lectures. Okay, then some. Then Chitragupta will be a little easy. Oh, you are going to mission also. Okay. So then he will be given manushyalokam. And that person will attain another birth, another opportunity, another chance by taking birth in this loka. And this loka is called Manushya Loka. That is the idea. Now, a few things I would like to Couple of things really I like to indicate as a follow-up discussion. Number one, in Bhagavad Gita also it is said that whatever is the most intense desire at the time of death, this is what is really indicated, apni bhavana ke anusar, according to the most potent thinking. So if the regret all this life was that I could not become a doctor. And next life, you'll take birth in a body and then with a mind and intellect system that is capable of making you a doctor in an environment where you can afford the fees and there is a good medical school or whatever. You understand? Whatever is the intense desire, that desire for fulfillment of desire will be given to you. So many people feel that therefore, at the time of death, I will control my thought and I'll make my intense desire to go to Paramatma. It's easy, you know, maja maja karo puri life. Don't have any regrets, go about doing things. But at the time of death, I will remember. So, you know, Lord is not that easy to cheat. That is why he has a lot of other assistants like Chitragupta, you know, making notes every day what you are doing. So you won't be cheated. You won't be able to override the most intense desire that you may have at the time of death. But the idea is, not necessarily at the time of death, but whatever was the overriding factor that ruled your life, whether the overriding factor was to acquire more and more money, or the overriding factor was to acquire more and more fame and name, or the overriding factor was to acquire a lot of lordship over people under you, whatever was the overriding factor, or whether the overriding factor throughout the life was to become a noble person or a spiritual giant, whatever was the intense desire, accordingly the prana will take the individuality and locate itself into another suitable body. So this is at the vyashti level. Samashti level, some other description will also come, we will see that. So I'm not done with this yet. We'll look at it. In Bhagavad Gita, another verse is also there. Just as the fragrance of the flower is taken by the breeze, similarly, the subtle body, along with the mind, takes the individuality and deposits into a suitable body for next chance. Okay, so that's one thing. Second thing I wanted to say was, we have heard about this karma, upasana and gnan, karma, upasana and gnan, karma, upasana and gnan. So what do we get if we follow karma yoga? What do we get if we follow the upasana kand? And what do we get if we follow the gnana kand? And yesterday after the lecture, somebody had a question as to what person should do, in what sequence. You first do karma, then do upasana, then you gnana, what happens? And it's an interesting question because it is raised. The way it is mentioned, we feel that karma has to be done first, followed by upasana. And then we will slowly, when the time comes, we will glide into gnana. But that is a wrong interpretation. These paths are not serial paths. And then we are also told that depending on the mental makeup and the likes and dislikes, our ability for karma may be more, or our ability for upasana may be more, or our ability for jnana may be more. That's okay to some extent. But by and large, we have to start with karma yoga. Because activity is something that cannot be put off. Upasana can be put off. The jnana can be, it can wait. But karma, every day in every activity, the moment we get up, wake up from the bed, until we go back to bed at night, we are engrossed in doing work. So therefore the best chance for us to make something out of it, which we are doing anyway, is to change the attitude with which we work. When that ordinary action can become karma yoga, and so that will uplift us in our spiritual progress. So truly speaking, most of us, all of us I think, can start very easily with karma yoga. A karma. A karma should not be translated as just ritualistic work, because many people do that. Although rituals are important, and the things that are mentioned in our shastra that we should do, like early morning prayers and chanting and sandhya vandana ityadi, which was followed very, very nicely in the old age, although that is also karma. Just as Bhagavan Sri Krishna has identified karma as more universally in Bhagavad Gita, we can take any activity and turn it into a karma yoga, if we had the right attitude. So now this karma has two types of phalam, drishtaphalam and adrishtaphalam. Things that we can see and things that we cannot see. Things which will fructify in future. So the drishtaphalam for karma is antakarana suddhi. So samadhi sat sampatti will come. Why? Because raga dvesa will go away. Mala will go away. So therefore, the drishtaphalam for karma is antakaran suddhi. And the adrishtaphalam is pitruloka prapti. Pitruloka here need to be translated as heaven. So therefore, the maximum benefit of karma yoga is that we will end up in heaven for some time before taking the next birth. Upasana, on the other hand, is something where we actually engage in doing activities with mindfulness. So there, you know, about a year or 2 years ago, there was a lot of this mindfulness was coined in. That is there thousands of years ago in our shastra. Upasana is nothing other than doing activity with mindfulness. That's upasana. So therefore, instead of mechanically performing a ritualistic activity, we also are able to chant what the pujari is chanting. And we know the meaning of what is being chanted. And we are reflecting on the meaning of the chanting that is going on mentally and get engrossed in it. It is upasana. It's just an example of upasana. So therefore upasana is always at the mental level. We can do activity at three levels: body level, physical level, at the level of speech, and then mental level. So whenever you hear this term upasana, please make sure you understand that it is at the mental level. So therefore sitting in a corner meditating is also upasana. Although you are physically not doing anything, you are not chanting anything, meditation is upasana. So upasana also has two phalam, drishtaphalam and adrishtaphalam. What is the drishtaphalam? The drishtaphalam is I will be able to create tadakara vritti. Vritti means thought. Tat means that. Akara means shape. So therefore, if my Ishta Devata is Shankara Bhagavan, Shiva, then through this practice of Upasana, I will be able to maintain and live in the presence of Shiva. My vritti will take the shape of Shiva or Krishna or Rama. In other words, I will be following the ideals set up by that entity. And I will feel like I am protected by that entity, that I am living with that entity from moment to moment. That is Adrushtafala. That will happen right here in this life. The Adrushtafalam is Brahmaloka Prapti. So at the time of that, if the karma and upasana are done properly, we will go to Brahmaloka. And in Brahmaloka, we will be given a special treatment. Brahmaji himself will teach us everything that we could not learn here. And then at the end of that, kaam ho gaya, chalo. Meaning, we'll become liberated so that we don't have to come back into this life as an ordinary human being or an animal or a plant or whatever. This is called Krama Mukti. Krama Mukti means not direct liberation, but there is an intermediate step. You know, it is a Southwest flight which has one stop. We don't have to change plane. But it's not a direct flight. You have to go through somewhere. Now the last one is Jnana. So Karma Upasana and then Jnana. What is Jnana? Jnana is that where ignorance is removed. So the spiritual practice in Gnan Marg is not to learn anything new. It is to unlearn everything that we have understood about who I am. And understanding that I am living my life. So you unlearn that. And when I come to understand who I really am by unlearning, then we say that Gnan ho gaya. And in Gnan, there is no Drashta and Adrashta Phalam separate. Drashta and Adrashta Phalam are same because we don't have to wait for the future for something to happen. It happens right here, right now, immediately. And what happens? Liberation. So that is how you separate these three, karma, upasana and jnana. You should be very clear now when you hear this terminology. But understand that for jnana to occur, karma and upasana are needed. So this is not to look down upon karma and upasana. The only difference is karma and upasana is not the ultimate goal. Karma and upasana is the path that we choose. The ultimate goal is to get knowledge about who I am. Okay, that's enough fighting. Alright. We go to the 8th mantra now. Aditya Have Bahyaha Prana Udayati Esha. Enam Chakshusam Pranam. Anugruhyana Prithivyavya. Devata Saisa. Purushya Papanam. Purushya Papanam. Avastabhya antaraha yadakasaha sasamano vayurvyanaha. So here the teacher is now explaining how this pancha prana is supporting the entire universe. So at the individual level, it is already mentioned. At the totality level, how is this pancha prana supporting the universe? That is what is mentioned. So the teacher says, Hawaii, it is quite well known. Everybody knows what Aditya Bahya Pranaha. That in the external world, Aditya, Agni principle, fire principle, Surya, Aditya Surya is nothing other than prana. So in outer world, Surya is the prana. Meaning, all the life that exists here, everything that is universally alive, everything that is universally existing, is all supported by the Surya principle, by the sun principle. And we know that to be scientifically true also. If sun were not to rise, if sun were to go away, or the energy of the sun were to get over, nothing can be sustained on this earth. So therefore, it is in the light of the sun, it is in the energy of the sun that everything exists on earth. So Aditya Havai Bahya Prana. Okay, then what? Udayati Esha Enam Chakshusam Pranam. This Udayati, the sun, when it rises, at that time, Pranam Anugruhanam Chakshusam. Out of compassion, out of favoritism, we can say Anugruhana. The prana at the samasti level, which is Aditya, comes and resides in the eye, at the individual level. Because eyes have the capacity to see. The eye's capacity to see is limited by the availability of light. Eyes cannot see anything in the darkness. And the light is provided by the sun. So therefore, in the light of the sun, eyes are able to see. So therefore, it is mentioned that this Aditya at the totality level resides, favors to reside. The lodging place of this Aditya in the individual level, in the individual existence, is in the eyes. Now, by saying that, two things are mentioned. Number one, that the prana at the totality level is also divided into five. Pana, apana, vyana, udana, and samana. And what is the symbolism for each one of them will be mentioned. So Aditya is mentioned for pana. The second thing that is indicated here is, it is the samasti level prana which supports the vyasti level prana. So at the samasti level, prana does not just support the universe, but it also empowers the individual functions of prana. So therefore, Aditya, the Surya, supports the prana functions of prana at the individual level. That is to say that what we consider to be mind-intellect equipment at the individual level, which we know as antakarana or the subtle body, is supported by Hiranyagarbha, which exists as total mind intellect equipment at the totality level. So Hiranyagarbha supports Antakarana. Pranas at the total level supports Prana at the individual level. Okay. Then Prithivyamya Devata Saisa Purusha Shapanam. Sa Esa, Saisa is this very one. What is this very one? This very one, Prana. When the Devata is it the Apana, as modified into Apana, that is indicated as Prithvi, this earth. So Pana is the Surya, Apana is the Prithvi, earth. And Apana actually has the capacity to keep us rooted to the Prithvi, rooted to the earth, so that we will not fly away somewhere. This Purushasya Apanam function is called Apanam here. That is to say that the force of gravity that holds us together to this earth was actually quite well known so many thousands of years ago. They did not call it the gravity, but they call it the Apanam force. So we stay rooted on the earth. Then avastabhya antaraha yadakasa sa samana. The in-between space between the sun and the earth, which is called antariksha, not the outer space. So the sun is in the outer space. Earth is here, but in between there is a layer, so that antariksha is samana. In between, the middle is samana, because here at the individual level also, the digestive system is in the middle of the body. And then vayur vyanaha. And then this vayu is the air that is moving about. This is the circulatory system. So just as the circulatory system cleans the body, similarly here the vayu also, if there is any pollution somewhere, it doesn't stay for that forever. Vayu takes it away. Just think about it. If the vayu was not there, and all of us keep meeting here in this room, after a few days it will stink of everything. And we will not be able to meet anymore. So it's a cleansing agent. The wind is, the vayu is the cleansing agent. So therefore vayu vyanaha. So therefore pana is mentioned, apana is mentioned, samana is mentioned, vyana is mentioned. At the samasti level, what is left? Udana at the samasti level is left. Okay. Let's go to ninth mantra.
Tejo havai udanah. Tasmadupasanta tejaha. Punarbhavam indriyehi. Manasi sampadyamanaihi.
Tejo havai udanah. Indeed, it is well known. The Teja is Udana. Teja is fire. Agni is the Udana. And Tasmat, therefore, Upashanta Teja. In the person on whose the fire has been extinguished, Punarbhavati, that person will have to take another body to continue the functions that were being, that are uncompleted. And therefore, indriyai manasi, the indriyas, the subtle senses, the subtle body, along with the mind, sampadyamane, enter into it and is carried to the next body. So here a beautiful description is given. Because once an individual person, individual personality is extinguished. You know, we also normally say that the thanda pad gaya matlab, the fire is extinguished in this person, is no longer able to sustain the temperature of the body because this tejas is extinguished, agni is extinguished, udana has taken over. And then at that time, at the samasti level, therefore this is the mention, agni is mentioned at the samasti level. And we travel through this path as an individual, all the indriyas will be absorbed. Now the indriyas are no longer able to function because their power is gone away already. So indriyas cannot function. There is no need for the indriyas to function. So they are compartmentalized into mana. So they are carried by the subtle body. So indriyas are packed up. Indriyas, don't think of indriyas as the eyes and ears, not physical structure. I'm talking about the ability to see, ability to hear, etc. Not the physical eyes and ears. So they are all compartmentalized and they are carried by the mind, the box of mind. And mind travels and takes it to next suitable body or waits until the next suitable body is available. So therefore, you know, they say that you cannot escape your own mind. The fact is that we cannot escape our own mind even in the next birth also. You know, so we have to change our mind. If you have dirty mind, it will remain dirty next year also. If you have inactive mind, it will remain inactive next year. If you have illumined mind, it will be illumined next birth. So therefore, it is now or never. We have to work on our mind, otherwise we'll be stuck with that mind wherever we go, year after, life after life after life. So sampadyamanai, absorbed in it, it enters into, along with the mind and indriyas, into another body. Okay. So therefore this fifth question is also answered. How this division of prana? Fifth means it is 3-5, not the fifth question. Fifth question hasn't come yet. Third question only, but 3E or 3-5. Okay. Now the 10th mantra makes it very clear that it is yamati sagati. Whatever is, we think, similar kind of gati we will have, unfortunately. Or fortunately, depends. So yat chittasnesa pranam ayati pranah tejasa yuktah sahya atmana yatha sankalpitam lokam nayati. Yat chit tenesha. Whatever is the thought. Whatever is our thought. That thought, the satchit is not there. It should be yatchit.
It is
okay. A new version, it is yatchit. In the old version, it is satchit. So yatchit tenesha, together with tenesha. So, whatever thought we may have, together with prana, ayati, takes flight, and pranas tejasa yuktaha, in association with this tejas. Tejas here stands for udana at the individual level. So tejasa, along with this udana, tejasa, saha atmana, along with the Atma here stands for Jiva Bhai, huh? Not Atma. So this is Jivatma, not the Atma. So along with this individuality, individual ego, individualistic antakarana, yatha sankalpitam loke nayati. So this udana or the tejas leads the person based on his or her thoughts along with the individualized antakarana to yatha sankalpitam loke, to whatever we have determined, wherever we have determined to go. So therefore, let's not blame Ishvara for why did you give me this life and why I was born here and not in the Birla family and all that. You know, that's because whatever was our desire, that was given. The blueprint was created by us. Our God cannot change that blueprint. So according to the blueprint, we have taken birth. The world that as was desired by us, yatha sankalpitam loke nayati. That udan is powerless. Whatever is the instruction, accordingly only the udan or tejas will take us to whichever loka that we were wishing to be born. Now, in the 11th mantra, the teacher feels that he has exhaustively answered all the questions that the student had. And this student he had already praised initially, that you are ati prasnat, you are asking questions that goes beyond the limits of intelligence, the limits of understanding, limits of logic. So therefore the student is prepared, he is ready for these answers, and he will take this advice and work accordingly. But out of the compassion, the teacher looks at other students like us and thinks that if he doesn't dangle out a carrot, we will not move. Therefore, in this mantra, carrot is being dangled out. How? Let us see. Ya eva vidvan pranam veda na hasya praja hiyante amruto bhavati tadesa sloka. Very simple. Yaha, whoever he who may be, evam, thus, vidvan pranam veda, comes to understand, comes to know, vedam comes to know, and has become vidvan. Vidvan in what? Mechanism of prana. So he has not become a spiritual vidvan, he has become prana vidvan. He understood everything that is mentioned by the teacher, and so he become now, he knows everything about prana now. What is prana at samasti level, vesti level? Where does the prana reside at the samasti level, vesti level? What happens at the time of death? Where do we go? Everything now he understood, right? So therefore we have become prana vidvan. So therefore whoever has become prana vidvan, he says, naha asya prajaha hiyante. Such a person in his praja, in his progeny, in his son, grandson, great grandson, nahiyate, there will be no break. So he will enjoy a lot of great grandsons. And he himself will become amruto bhavati. He will not be subject to death. Now here we have to take this for a little pinch of salt. Because they say, oh, amruta bhavati, then no, that is fine then. Why should I go any further? Just I prana vidvan ban gaya, to meri to baat ho gayi, you know. No, no, no. This amruta is temporary amruta. So there is a permanent amruta, in which case we don't take birth again. We have become free from this life and death cycle. Sansar se nikal gaye. This is temporary amruta in the sense we will have a reasonably long life, and after that, if we have done the upasana properly, we'll end up going to Brahmaloka. And then Brahmaloka, there is a good chance, in fact almost 100% chance, that Because I'll be spending time with Brahmaji and a teacher Brahmaji will be teaching me, so therefore I don't have to come back. I will become free by Krama Mukti. That is the promise. Now, any intelligent person will think about it and say, then what is the benefit? Because in this life, I'm being tossed and turned about by the events in life, buffeted up and down, going through happiness and unhappiness. Everybody is kicking me and I'm in pain. And then after I die, it will happen. Kya dekha hai, but ye life toh kahi. So therefore, any intelligent person will not accept that as the final answer. They will say, no, but what about this life? What can I do to change the things around so that this life I'll start enjoying the freedom that I deserve? Why do I deserve? Because I am the Atman, I am the Brahman. What are you talking about? I cannot come under any bondage. I am ever free. Nitya Suddha Mukta Chaitanya Swarupa I am. Can I know that this life? So then the teacher will become so happy and he will embrace the student and say, yes, yes, yes. I was waiting for you to ask that question because yes, that is called Jivan Mukta. The end goal of all Upanishadic literature is to make us Jivan Mukta. They are not interested in taking us to Mrityuloka or Swargaloka or even Brahmaloka. They are not interested. The goal of Upanishadic literature is for us to attain freedom right here, right now, in this life. So these are all preliminary things. That is why it is defined as the aparavidya. This is not paravidya. What we have seen, this question number 1, 2 and 3 are good for karma and upasana, which are very much necessary depending on what level we are at. But the Jnanakand has not started yet. So therefore question number 4, 5 and 6 is about paravidya, supreme knowledge. That is where we need to have so that we can attain freedom right here. So that needs to be clearly understood, because this amrut is used, we have to understand that in the context. That this amrut is not amrut here. This amrut is promised in the future. The future kisne dekha hai? I want drishtafalam, I don't want adrishtafalam. So therefore then jnana becomes very, very important. Now the teacher here says, tadesha slokaha. Let's understand the significance of that. He says, this is not my saying, this is not my teaching. For this there is a sloka, for this there is a mantra. Now why is it said? Because we say that the Vedas, all four of the Vedas, can be divided into four parts. The first part is the mantra portion. The second part is the Brahmana portion. The third part is the Aranyak. And the fourth is the Upanishad. So Upanishad comes in the end portion of the Veda. Therefore it is also called Vedanta. Now in the mantra portion, a lot of stuti is given. A lot of instructions are also given. And the Brahmana portion is usually that portion which actually explains the significance and the meaning of the mantra portion. So the mantra portion comes first and Brahmana portion comes later. Therefore it is believed that if there are any doubts or there is any confirmation that needs to be mentioned by the teachers, they always go back to the mantra portion, which is considered to be the most original portion of the Vedas. Because the explanation and everything can come later, Mantra comes first because this was the first revelations that were blurted out by these Mahatmas when they came to their body sense from their intense mood of oneness with the Paramatma. So therefore the mantra portion is considered to be more authoritative than the later portion. And therefore, if there are any doubts or there are seemingly some conflicts from one Upanishad to another or some one Veda to another or one portion to another, what is cited as evidence of this is the truth is the mantra portion. Okay. Now this Prashna Upanishad and Mundaka Upanishad are related. How are they related? They are both in the Atharva Veda. But the Mundaka Upanishad is in the mantra portion and the Prashna Upanishad is in the Brahmana portion. I have said this before actually, very first class. So this is in the Brahmana portion and the Mundaka Upanishad that we are going to see next is in the mantra portion. It is said that when there are two Upanishads like that, the Upanishad that comes in the Brahmana portion is usually taken as a commentary of the Upanishad that is in the mantra portion. The Upanishad in the Brahmana portion, therefore this Mundaka Upanishad is actually a commentary on Prashna Upanishad. So this is the arrangement. And so therefore, whatever is being mentioned in this Mundaka Upanishad will have to establish itself on the basis of what has come in the Mundaka Upanishad. Okay. And you will see very much similarity in these two Upanishads. When we study Mundaka, you will see that. But one thing that you will see is that in Prashna Upanishad, more emphasis is given on Upasana. And in Mundaka Upanishad, more emphasis is given on Karma. So you will see that in Upasana, only one mantra is there for Upasana. Most of the mantras are for the Karma in Mundaka Upanishad. So therefore the order is reversed here. It is thought that equal weight needs to be given to Upasana also. And therefore here, second and third question both are considered as Upasana Kanda. So there's a long list of mantras that we have seen. These are all Upasana. Particularly the third question is Upasana. We can say that the second question was just glorification of prana, so that we will be in awe of prana. What a powerful force prana is. Therefore, we will be able to do upasana on prana. We will be able to meditate. We will be able to do revere this prana. We will be able to prostrate to this. You know, we will be able to do puja of the prana, ityadi we can say. Therefore, prana was glorified in the second question and then in the third question. Upasana techniques are given. Each one of these can be taken, each one of the mantras can be taken as Upasana technique. Okay, so what is the sloka? That is the last one. Utpattim ayatim sthanam bibhutvam chaiva panchadha adhyatmam chaiva pranasya vignaya amrutam asnute vignaya amrutam asnute iti. So vignaya amruta asnadi is repeated twice, yeah, to make sure that This will what happen. What will happen? Vignaya, having come to understand this, Amrutam Asnute, you will attain immortality. You will attain immortality. So knowing what? Knowing whatever has been mentioned in this as an answer to this question only. But the teacher here kindly summarizes it. Utpattim, the origin of prana. Ayatim, his coming to this body. Sthanam, his place of lodging. Vibhutvam, his lordship over cha eva panchada, over the pancha prana. Adhyatmam, at the universal totality level, as well as at the individual microcosmic level. Chaiva pranasya, whoever has come to know about this glorification of prana, this functioning of the prana, will indeed attain immortality. So therefore we should now do prana upasana. Okay, with that this question is over. And we did not want to go into question number 4, so we will end the discussion here and wait for the next opportunity where we can take the discussion of question 4, 5 and 6. So we have some time. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to give you the answer as much as I know. Upanishad has any proof of? That's a very loaded question. And I said it is loaded because our Shastra is based on this belief that we get multiple chances to attain Godhead. And so therefore, in the Smriti Granthas and in the beginning portion of the Vedas and everywhere, we can confirm that Punarjanma will happen if we are not able to attain moksha in this life, so that the idea of eternal hell and heaven is not in our philosophy. The idea is only temporary hell and heaven. We will not be in eternal hell and heaven. However, I should add that the highest Upanishad, which is the Mandukya Upanishad, which we will take after Mundak. So Prasna Mundak and then Mandukya will come, which has been glorified as that Upanishad, having read and understood that Upanishad, no other Upanishad study is necessarily, because you will attain Jivan Mukti right here, and if you don't, then you continue. That is what is mentioned in Muktika Upanishad. So therefore Mandukya Upanishad is glorified as the highest knowledge. And Mandukya Upanishad and the accompanying Gaudapada Karika establishes the Ajatavad such that the very existence of creation is denied. So neither I am created, so no multiplicity is ever created, therefore no world, no jagat is ever created, and therefore there is no question of Amrutam, because I am ever permanently in the state of Amrutam only. And very systematically and logically that will be established by the Karika in the Mandukya. Therefore, if we go to that state, there is no punarjanma. If we understand that this creation has no substratum, has no basis, and we firmly come to understand that, and then jnana ho gaya, then there is no question of punarjanma. So it is like this. If I am in a dream state and the dream is continuing and I haven't woken up yet, but now and then the gurus will come and the sastra will come, tatol tatol ke thoda jaga diya. But I have not really owned up my waking state. Again you go back to sleep, another dream will continue. Not the same dream, another dream will continue. And another dream will continue, and another dream will continue. But if you wake up, no successive dreams are possible. So it is so crystal clear that there is no question. So I'm very happy because I will take a break now. Well, this is a chance for you to ask if you have any doubts. I don't know what is it. There is no reason. But so basically, I think organs are mentioned here. Right? So, according to the organ, the system is divided up. So, according to the lungs, there is an pana. Then by the stomach, where the digestion takes place, the digestive system. Then the heart, there is a circulatory system. And then there is an anus and all that. So, there is an ejectory system. And by mentioning udana, a reference is made to the nervous system. So, ida, pingala and susumna are part of the same thing. Efferent and afferent nerves and then susumna, which is not open. So, susumna you cannot see. Susumna is not medically proven. But it is such a subtle thing that it is not almost visible. Or maybe it is invisible completely, but it is the one that takes us from our animalistic state of existence to human state of existence to the devata state of existence. So it is a spiritual journey, progress from the lowest level of existence to a higher level of existence. So it depending upon our value system that we have imbibed, we decide at what level we want to live. So if there is a lot of mala and lot of vikshepa, lot of impurities are there in the mind, then we can say it, we are at the animalistic level. But if we see nothing other than good only, we think of nothing other than how I can contribute to the good of the whole society, not just for me personally, not just for my family, ityadi, ityadi. Then to that level, we have actually attained godly level. So yeah, it is, I don't know what is mentioned, but I think it is referenced, I mean it is inferred actually, if it is not directly mentioned. Many other Upanishads, many other texts will also mention that depending upon at what level we are in spiritual progress. You know, if we are, our spiritual progress is the highest, then actually from the Sahasradhar where prana will live eventually. Otherwise the prana will live from mouth or from from other parts of the body, etc., etc. You know, some people, when they die, their mouth is open, some people close, eyes are open, so they left from the eyes, ityadi, ityadi, people say. So next time you see a dead person, don't try to find out where did the prana live. That is not the point. Okay. Anything else? Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Sri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.